You know, oh, it's the start of something, hopefully.
Welcome to the Garibaldi Gazette, a podcast about Nottingham Forest. On this week's episode, Clats Entertainment, Forest Hire ref analyst, Football World collectively asks, huh? There are big plans for a new City ground, a heartening win against the Hammers, another Claret and Blue clash incoming, and crying at football. When, why and how? Wondering what our gladiator names would be? This is the Garibaldi Gazette. Sloth, for me, I think would be my gladiator name, probably, most fitting. How you doing, listener? It's nice to have you back with us. We're here to talk about Forest again. We've got more than the full house today. It's me, Matt Davis-Adams. I'm joined, as ever, by Arsha Ali. How you doing, Arsha?
I'm good. I'm here. I'm ready to talk about Forest until I'm red in the face.
It's a big time of the week for you, this, isn't it? Because you always come in fully pumped and ready to talk about our favourite subject. Nick Miller's back with us too. How you doing, Nick?
I'm all right. It's that... I like the enthusiasm. That's nice. I'm away for 1 week and suddenly it's, you know, welcoming me back into your bosom.
Yeah, it was a tough old gig for Usher and I last week. Now then, we've got what I would call a full debutant. I think we've had a couple of appearances off the bench, if we're going metaphorically, from David Marples in the form of a voice note. But you're in from the off today, David. We're very pleased to have you. Welcome.
Yeah, well, I'm delighted to be here in real life as well. So that's great. I've been slogging away in the lower leagues for years. So it's it's just, you know, I'm looking to take this opportunity with both hands.
Premier League in every regard, I'm sure. Right, we've got loads to get to today. Let's start with some news. So, as you'll have heard, Forest have appointed former Premier League and current Gladiators referee Mark Clattenburg as referee analyst. He said, "It's not unusual for clubs in other countries to use refereeing consultants, though the Premier League has never embraced this idea to my knowledge. Until now, that is, because I'll be working with Forest under the title of match and performance analyst. I'll help in the understanding of how and why certain decisions are made, prepare pre-match packs on the officiating teams, take charge of their fixtures, and one of my other main aims will be improving the relationship between the club and PGMOL." I mean, we've all had a good laugh at this, Nick, and kind of been a bit repulsed by it, I think, for a while, but I sense maybe the tide's turned in the last few days. There's been a couple of stories of people saying, well, this happens a lot in other sports, why shouldn't Forest do it? Is that a genuine reason, and are we kind of turned off by this initially because it's Mark Clattenburg and he has the reputation of being a bit of a wally?
Well, I did wonder whether you were saying we've all been sort of annoyed and disgusted by your impression of him there. Which, difficult to tell whether that was Clattenburg or Sid the Sexist from Viz, but, you know, it's just weird, isn't it? I mean, sure, I don't know, maybe it makes... there's a sort of logic to it if you accept it from the position that Forest are in, but for the position that Forest are in and have got themselves in due to the constant complaining and the, you know, requests for clarification on the rules or whatever that means. But if they just... hadn't have done all that and just gone, well, you know, bad referee decisions, sometimes we get them, sometimes we don't, then there wouldn't really be any need for this. It just feels like another slightly daft distraction from stuff and another kind of implication that there is some kind of, I don't know, I hesitate to use the word conspiracy, but that, you know, they've all got in for us kind of thing, which the owners have obviously expressed in slightly more emphatic terms in Greece. But yeah, I don't know. You can make various sort of logical arguments for it. And I'm sure it is kind of comforting for them to ring up Clattenburg and say, well, why didn't we get this penalty? And he sort of meekly explains that, you know, tries to explain that stepping on someone's heel doesn't mean a penalty or something. I don't know. It's just weird. I mean, I can't really. It's a little bit difficult to get past that. Weird and feels a bit unnecessary. And I'm sorry, I can't offer any more insight into it than that. That it's just quite weird.
is kind of enough to make you want to Google nihilism. Really, like, it's just a bit, it's a pretend job. There's nothing here that we can say. He's basically been given a job guarding a room full of like invisible, broken dreams and kind of, I don't know, a kind of like airborne despair that only, you know, video assistant referees can see, or, you know, or scientists probably. I don't know. Do you know what I mean? Like, what is the point of it? It's a completely pretend job. And if the owner's kind of signed off on it, if you're Mark Clattenburg, yeah, man, take the money. You know, it's free money. You know, of course you take it. But I think the best bit comes now. Now's the best bit where we have to see Mark Clattenburg kind of pretending that there's a really good reason for his employment, you know, even though he probably thinks it's completely ridiculous, you know, himself. But appointing him, it kind of like, even just talking about the gladiators, it kind of makes gladiators now look like it's a kind of vital public service as opposed to this. But I don't know. I mean, for me, there's quite a few people who sit, you know, in the room with all the trophies in it, you know, on non-match days and have their meetings, who are total pretenders. I'm sure he'll fit in nicely, but it will literally change nothing at all. It's a box that, you know, didn't exist and has been kind of ticked, you know, with a quill dipped in the tears of English referees. I don't know. You know, it's just pointless. It's completely, it's just nonsense, but it kind of feels like harmless nonsense. And, you know, what's going to happen? You know, we talked about this last week. What's going to happen? Like, all that's going to happen is, you know, maybe a few more referees have to kind of slum it in the championship, because these things are still going to happen, you know, and that's their kind of punishment or whatever. But, you know, just get over it. You know, get over the PGMOL and just, you know, let's move on like big boys and girls.
David, what do you think Forrest are looking for from this? Because from what we understand, it's not like Clattenburg's got a great relationship with Howard Webb particularly. So are they just looking for someone to sympathise and say, yeah, you are getting some bad decisions?
Maybe just to save on post, you know, direct messenger straight to PGMOL. But is it Clattenburg or is it Steve Bruce? I've never heard your impressions of Steve Bruce and Clattenburg in the same room. As has been said, obviously, it's weird. That's the first thing. We can talk about, and people have talked about marginal gains and gaining understanding and seeking advantage in whatever way we want to. But it just invites that opprobrium, doesn't it, from various people in the media and opposition fans. But it's not the weirdest appointment Nottingham Forest have ever made, though. I mean, I put it to you that in October 2020, Louis Ducray, Princess Stephanie of Monaco's son, was appointed to raise the international profile of Nottingham Forest. And I'm sure that we've benefited and really done that profile no end of good since then. So it's not the weirdest appointment. Just earlier as well, it doesn't matter if it's Clattenburg or Mariner or Graham Poll, or showing my age there, but I'm one of these people who've got zero interest in who the referee is. You know, some clubs, some fans sort of tweet out who the referee is, and that invites various takes, I believe is the word. I don't really care about who it is. I think what we can take from this is we can take solace that we've not appointed Roger Milford, because that would have been left field, shall we say.
Gary Neville's not a fan. He said, I'm disappointed with Nottingham Forest. It's as if, look at all this. Well, it's me. I get it. Some teams feel as though they've been outdone too. So yeah, not gone down brilliantly in the media. There is another big story in the world of Forest this week. It's something that Daniel Taylor wrote for The Athletic on Forest plans to redevelop the city ground. The idea is to make a bunch of changes, including increasing the stadium's capacity to 40,000, extending the Bridgeford stand by another 5,000 seats to go with the Peter Taylor stand being at a two-tier one, and building a new training ground and opening a museum in the bowels of the Trent End. David, you're the season ticket holder amongst us. Are you welcoming these reforms? Obviously, it doesn't make a huge difference to you because you've got your ticket anyway, but there are tens of thousands of people, including me, who really struggle to actually get tickets to matches. So this has got to be a good thing, right?
Absolutely. On the surface, of course it is. Expansion is essential. I think demand for tickets just never really ceases to astonish me. I'm happy to be corrected. I think all these sellouts started under Martin O'Neill towards the end of that season. We just seem to have maintained it since then. And you can see it in the cup games as well that we see. So yeah, absolutely. Everybody's welcome. I mean, the museum you mentioned there, I believe that's going to be in the Trent End. And having been into the bowels of the Trent End and seen what it was used for before, this museum. Well, I can tell you, I'm looking forward to the metamorphosis of that room. Let's just say there was a lot of discarded training gear kicking around in there. But yeah, absolutely brilliant that we're going to get it as well. So bring it on. Let's see as many fans there as possible.
Arsha, we have been critical of the way Forest is run and the ownership in the early episodes of this podcast. I think we ought to give them some praise here. I'm grateful that the owner wants to keep us at the City Ground. I'm still haunted by that clip art image of a nondescript stadium that we got all those years ago, that this is going to be built somewhere at some point. And doing it kind of piece by piece and trying to incrementally increase the match day revenue, these are all very sensible things, right?
Yeah, and you've said all that, but I will say, I'll believe it when I see it, because Forest Daddy, he likes to promise things and they take a while. But yeah, obviously, like personally, I would, like you've just said, I would love this to happen because it would mean that I wouldn't be subject to the whimsy of the ticket exchange and I could actually go when, when the feeling takes me. But like, yeah, just to talk about the idea of moving, I mean, that's sick in the mouth, isn't it? That's we don't want that. Like I remember those plans. I seem to remember that it was Gamston. Was it Gamston?
There's Gamston and Clifton as well, I think, wasn't there?
But like the Gamston one sticks out for me because I had no idea up until then that Gamston even existed. Because I'm from Sherwood, mate. You know what I mean? Like that's that side of town that has nothing to do with me. NG2 or whatever. The City Ground was the furthest I ever went. Yeah, so moving is just a no-no. And if you can get round, because obviously it's quite a contentious area. You've got your local residents, you've got everything, you've got split councils or whatever, and obviously you've got a council that's completely on its arse at the moment as well. So there are obviously a lot of interests in it. But if you can kind of, like you say, if you can kind of piece by piece do it and get it to where they want it to be, it'd be amazing. And the training ground as well, because that still rankles me, the Leicester training ground being quite close to the border and and them encroaching, on our patch, and our kind of like talent kind of area. So yeah, I mean, training ground definitely feels like it's like way behind, and that would be, an amazing improvement to the infrastructure of the entire club.
It just strikes me that, as Arsha said, a huge conflict of interest there for such a prime piece of land, which City Ground is on. Logistically, I can only imagine how difficult it is to get these kind of things moving and completed. And it just one thing that sort of I imagine that there's issues around the boat club as well, and that's been there. They've been there for since long before Forest ever pitched up there. So I think it's really important not to sort of railroad over other interested parties on that patch of land and ensure that obviously everybody who has an interest is happy with any such deal. When it does eventually come around, I've got to say I'm already sad about the floodlight being unceremoniously dismantled, literally without any ceremony. And there are people, ridiculously sad people out there who would have attended such a ceremony as well. And I will be sad to see the little white wall at the front of this stand when and eventually this actually does come to fruition. Just that little white wall has seen it all.
The training ground's a big one, right, Nick? I remember when we had Gary Brazil on the erstwhile Forest podcast, Two Stars, and he was telling us about how Leicester had moved to Seagrave just off the A46 because they wanted to get into the Nottingham catchment area to get kids. So this is not something that's going to happen overnight. It can't really be done incrementally either, like the ground rebuild, I guess. So important to get the training ground done, but let's not expect this to be ready for next season kind of thing.
Yeah, definitely. And it's, I don't know if anyone here has sort of been to the current training ground as it is. It's not, I mean, it's not a primo facility. It's the pitches are fine, but the kind of the indoor like gym facilities are basically what you might expect from a kind of five-a-side court in the 90s. And the buildings aren't, they're sort of fine, but they're not what you would kind of expect from a any kind of team with ambition, or any Premier League or Championship team, to be honest. And yeah, that the point that people make about the Leicester training ground is sort of encroaching slightly on Forest catchment area is a sort of an irritation. I don't know, how sort of real those problems are will turn out to be, but yeah, it's almost kind of slightly embarrassing to, there was that story about, I don't know whether it was this, was that story about Willian being shown around the training ground in the summer. And it was like, Willian's being shown around the training ground. He's he's agreed to contract, and he's going to be conducting a medical. And then very quietly and suddenly he decided not to sign for Forest. And I'm sure, Fulham may have offered him better terms, and he might have decided against joining a slightly chaotic football club. But the tour of the training ground is not going to, it isn't going to kind of wow anyone. It's not going to tip the balance. If you took someone round, there are other reasons to sign for Tottenham, but if you took round Tottenham's training ground, is this kind of gleaming palace of football, this incredible place. And if you took someone around there and said, this is where you're going to be working every day, that's, it can feel quite silly to think that the facilities somewhere are going to persuade anyone to sign for a club. But if you're taking someone round and saying, this is where you're going to be working every day, and this is the environment you're going to be in, then it's, clearly a factor. So yeah, the sooner the better. But as you say, this is, I'd be amazed if we actually get this inside, what, I don't know, 5 years, something like that.
Something which might happen sooner than that is the possibility of installing safe standing areas, possibly in the Lower Bridgeford End. Lots of Premier League clubs have got this already. David, that Lower Bridgeford End in particular, it's mainly just standing anyway at the moment, isn't it? And we know that that's not safe. So this feels like a no-brainer to me.
Absolutely, but it's important to distinguish how some clubs have gone about this kind of thing. I mean, proper rail seating would be the absolute preference, not some kind of bolt-on rail seating. The thing about proper rail seating is that it's flush, so there's no curved plastic seats sticking out. And we've I've been to see it work at various places like Shrewsbury, and just it needs to be done. If it's going to be done, it needs to be done properly rather than just sticking in some seats against which you can lean against. So that's quite important as well, I think. So, but yeah, other clubs have managed to do it much quicker and more effectively than Forest. So hopefully we can catch up on that.
Yeah, might further increase the atmosphere at the City Ground, which was pretty good on Saturday when Forest saw off West Ham. We'll have a look back at that next. All right, so Forest got that much needed home win we've been pining for on the pod as West Ham came to the world famous and rolled over. Arsha, I'll give you first dibs on talking about the brilliance of Taiwo's goal.
Oh yeah, and it's, not to toot my own horn. I'm going to do it anyway. They played in the ball behind. They did it. They did exactly what I said. It wasn't Morgan Gibbs-White, but it was Nico Dominguez. That's what you got to do, sneak him in behind, because that's what West Ham are susceptible to. I thought we were great, man. Like, isn't the world a better place when Forest win, especially when they win at home? It's, it's just your week. It just goes that just that bit better. The spring in your step is higher. But I thought we played well. We kind of mixed it up. They were so, they matched up so just quite boringly at the start of the game. You just thought they were going to completely cancel each other out. But I thought, we played well. We mixed it up. We got out wide. We sort of played through the middle as well. But forget about all that. Can we talk about a few players here? Chief among them, can we talk about Murillo? We need to talk about Murillo. He's rubbish. Just to everyone out there, he's completely rubbish. He had the worst game of his life, and he's gonna, it's gonna be hard work for him to get back in the team.
He's got Felipe on side alongside him, which makes it a lovely little partnership of youth and experience. You probably saw, listener, the stat that they put up on Monday Night Football about Taiwo Awoniyi having the best shot conversion rate of any striker with a minimum of 12 goals in the Premier League since the start of last season. His is 28.6%, which is better than Erling Haaland's, whose is 26.1%. Nick, we've spoken about it before, but we've got to keep him fit if we're going to stay in the Premier League. It's not quite as simple as that, but it's not far off it.
Yeah, I mean, in some ways, Saturday was the perfect game. I mean, it wasn't from Awoniyi's perspective, at least, because he, scored a goal, battered people for 70 minutes, and then came off for 20 minutes where they, I don't know, presumably put him in a large bucket of ice or something. So it wasn't as enjoyable as the goal, but there was a bit, I think, just before the goal where I think it was Agued he was up against, just bounced off him. It was just incredible. It's like, and Agued's not a not a little weakling of a centre back. A ball, I think, a ball came in to the area. Agued tried to kind of muscle him out, and it was just bounced off him, full on the floor, no chance of even making a dent into on you. So yeah, just kind of wrap him in any kind of bubble wrap, cotton wool, soft, gentle duvets, whatever you've got, really. Just make sure that he's fit. Although, and not that we would we, you want to put any kind of long-term planning into using Divock Origi, but he seemed to do all right when he came on. But as long as we can keep Origi to sort of 10, 15, 20 minute cameos, then, where he does a little weird flick, which, obviously turned out all right, then that's fine. But yes, please, Tyro, be careful. Don't, tread on anything.
Yeah, just send him to soft play instead of training in the week. Just let's find the, there must be loads in West Bridgford. Just book the entire place out and send him to soft play.
All the infection on those balls, though, Arsha, that worries me just as much.
Oh, scratch that. Don't send him to soft play.
Planet Bounce, pretty good. Just up from the ice stadium, doesn't have any soft plastic balls. So maybe go there, Taiwo, if you like. David, talk to me a bit about how you're feeling about Nuno's brand of football. Is it that much different from Steve Cooper's?
I think what I kind of saw was that when we did break, and we've always been brilliant at breaking under Cooper, but when we did break against West Ham, it was noticeable that we had just not two or three players running forward, but three or four players busting a gut to get forward. And that seems like a bit of an evolution, perhaps, on Cooper's brand of football. And the obvious thing to say is that we seem to be a bit more solid at the back. And earlier we were talking about individuals, and Dominguez is just, I really like Dominguez. But what was particularly nice also was see Felipe just slotting in, because I was a bit worried against Bristol City, I think it was, where he just in the second half seemed to be a bit tired, and you could see how nippier, faster players, strikers might easily turn him. But it just really great to see, just great in many ways, to see Felipe stepping out for Forest and putting a performance like that as well. So whether, again, if there's room in the cotton room for Felipe as well, if we can keep him fit, if we can, develop that partnership, that bodes well as well.
Yeah, I think it's about just keeping him going and seeing if he can get to the end of the season. But got plenty of cover at centre back at the moment, so things looking up, hopefully. All right, there are a couple of ways that you can support our podcast. You can give us a nice review and a 5-star rating on Apple Podcasts, Spotify, wherever you get your pods. You can tell a friend about us, and if you're able, you can help out our charity partners. The first of which are Hope Nottingham, who offer a food bank service for those in need in Notts. Here's Nigel Adams from the charity to tell us more.
Hope Nottingham runs a network of 14 community hubs and food banks across the Nottingham area, everywhere from Stapleford across to Netherfield. In the last year, we've given out 25,000 food parcels for people that are struggling with all kinds of difficulty due to cost of living, due to unemployment, due to homelessness, all sorts of different issues. But we're only able to do that because we get massive, wonderful support from so many people. And Nottingham Forest, actually, in recent years, have been really helpful to us. We've done a number of food bank collections at the ground through Nottingham Forest. And the massive support that we get across the city, we're able to bring hope to hundreds of people.
To donate, visit localgiving.org/hopenotstgg. We'll provide a link in the show notes too. All right, we'll preview Aston Villa next. Can't get enough claret and blue at the moment, can we? From West Ham to Aston Villa for the two-time European champions as Forest head to the West Midlands on Saturday. David, next three league games are looking pretty tricky, aren't they? Villa away, Liverpool at home, Brighton away. So maybe a bit of trepidation going into this one, But Villa have actually lost their last three home games, and we aren't going to be starting with Jonjo Shelvey, so maybe there is cause for optimism.
I'm going to take a rare voice of optimism here, but although you've just brought me down with the mention of Shelvey, which just takes me to a bad place. But as we all know, the well-trodden narrative about Villa is their exceptionally high line, and I can't think of a, can anybody think of a team who's got pace up front, who played wide, speedy wingers, and might be able to exploit such a high line. I'm holding on to that one desperately with both arms. Although, so the away pub at Villa is, I don't know if you've ever been in, but it is, and I'm not exaggerating here, it resembles a post-apocalyptic zombie film where the protagonists have been holed up for the night. And we're talking more Walking Dead than Winchester Arms here. And I will share a picture that I took last season. There is, in the pub, there is literally, somebody scrawled in big black letters, "Help," on the inside of a wall. So I won't be going there, shall we say. But I think we've, against all, you know, all the pessimism inside me, I just wonder if we could easily come away from Villa with a point, if we can adapt that line and manage to get beyond that press.
I seem to remember last time I was at Villa, where you park, there's a big sign where there's obviously a nightclub or something, and it says absolutely no car raving, which every time I go there just delights me. It's a wonderful thing.
Bear that in mind.
Is car raving a euphemism for dogging?
Because of the context of it, I don't think it is. I think it is literally not going into the club, but passing in your car instead, which, right. Is not something that I've ever done personally, but obviously it's quite popular in the West Midlands. Oh, crikey, Davies just sent me the picture of that help sign. Yeah, that does look pretty bleak. Stay away if you are off to the game. Nick, I wonder if Olaena, Willy Bolly and Ibrahim Sangare are going to be off to the game. People were quite cross that they weren't available for the West Ham match, having come back late from AFCON. Did it annoy you? And which of those three, if any, are likely to feature here?
No, it didn't annoy me at all, because it seemed to be Nuno's decision. And there were a couple of other players who were involved in the AFCON final that did play elsewhere in the Premier League. But presumably Nuno had been preparing all week with the players that were had been there all week, and they weren't. They, you know, Aina and Sangare and Bolly got, I think, got back on Wednesday or Thursday. So, you know, maybe it would have been nice to have them as options. But if you're planning for the whole week without them, then there's not much point in kind of chucking them in just for the sake of it. I mean, a bit tricky to see where they fit in, really, because, you know, certainly before the last few games, I would have had Aina in at right back straight away. But Nico Williams has been really good, particularly against West Ham. Tavares is still a bit of a misguided missile, but he has also been pretty good. So you probably wouldn't put Aina in there, you know, until he kind of, when he sort of winds up for one of those shots on his weaker foot, it's like a sort of runaway truck crashing. You can, but very, very slowly, you can see it happening. You can see it happening from a mile off, and there's nothing you can do about it apart from just sort of sit back and accept that this ball is going to sail over the bar. But again, but he hasn't done anything in particular to lose his place. He wouldn't put Aina in left back either. There's now probably, I mean, in terms of his place at Forest, the AFCON couldn't have gone worse for Bolly, really, because there's probably two, maybe three players in front of him in the sort of pecking order. If we assume that Murillo is the automatic start, obviously we all like the reassurance of Felipe in there if he can stay fit, and Omar Bamadeli has done pretty well, maybe even Nicarte too, so he wouldn't go straight back in. I suppose Sangare of the three is the most likely to get back straight back into the team, and even then you're not dropping Dominguez. I know Nuno has kind of rotated who plays in that position in the last few games, but, you know, Danilo seemed to do pretty well against West Ham as well. Obviously, everyone here loves Yatesy. So, and then this is all kind of coloured by everything is all right after a victory, and it's a win often renders you completely incapable of thinking sort of critically and thinking in the longer term and what might be better beyond the next few games. But at the moment, I don't see how the three of them really kind of get back into the team.
What do you think, Arsh? Are you making any changes for this game? It was the return fixture was the last great hurrah for Steve Cooper, really, wasn't it? So it'd be interesting to see if Nuno can continue his reasonably good away form.
I think, like Nick's just said, like, you know, the only one for me is the kind of midfield one with Sangare. But I thought, I mean, I really like Dominguez. Like, for me, he's like a sort of pair of safety scissors. You know, he's sort of like innocuous and kind of little, but like deadly. You know, he's got to stay in. Like, and I thought Danilo as well. Like, I didn't expect them to work so well. I know it's only one game, but I thought they worked quite nicely. You know, they kind of dovetailed. It felt like, oh no, there's no physical presence, you know, in the middle. Oh, how's that going to work? But it just kind of worked. So Sangare is the one where you think like, oh, okay, so what are you going to do with him? You know, especially because we've said this, I've probably said this, like this is the fourth time I'm saying it now. He did well before he left for the AFCON. So we'll see, like, you know, if he can sort of come in. But I mean, yeah, Nico Williams, you know, we were talking about him last week. He just had such a great game. Like, he had kudos, like, it was like chewing gum on the bottom of his boots. Like, I hate that, by the way. I hate it when people do that because I play football and I hate it when you see, like, you know, kids just spitting chewing gum onto the turf. And then, you know, yeah, there's some of us, you know, turn up with, you know, boots that we might have paid a pretty penny for. And then I'm forever scraping chewing gum off the bottom of Predators. But anyway.
Arsha, come back. You've this old man Arsha is complaining about the kids again. The nurses aren't stealing your clothes, Arsha.
I need a skit every week. I need like a sort of what grinds my gears kind of skit every week. But Nuno as well. Like, I know we were sort of privately discussing, like, you know, oh, do we owe him a Nuno Tavares? Do we owe him an apology? Not quite. Like, he's definitely, he's still not quite there. He had the most, or he had the second most touches, I can't remember, most like touches in the opposing box, which was like, when I saw that, I was like, oh, okay, yeah, he did sort of like bomb forward quite a lot, but there's no end product. And, you know, like you say, when he winds up to shoot, all I'm thinking is, who the hell is he going to hit in the middle of the Trent end? Like, oh, look, you know what I mean? Like, you can sort of, the camera almost pans, you know, it sort of zooms out to sort of let you know that it's going to end up like way up there in the top of the frame. So stop doing that. Stop shooting, you know, with your weaker foot. You're a footballer. How long have you been a footballer? Quite a long time. Stop shooting with your weaker foot.
Yeah, not the worst thing he's done of late, though, is it? I still can't get that image out of my head. Just don't kiss dogs. Like, I love dogs, but they lick way off the pavement and stuff. It's just not hygienic at all. Anyway, big game at Villa Park. Forest's last win there was 2-0 in October 1994, so we're probably due a positive result. I'd take a 5-5 if that was on offer as well, I think. Looking forward to that. That is nearly it for today. But before we go, inspired by that tear-jerking clip of the 92-year-old Forest fan Vera Hill standing pitchside to take in Mull of Kintyre one more time, I want to know when you've cried at football. David, there's been plenty of reasons to shed tears at Forest games over the last 20 to 30 years. Has there been anything in particular that has left you broken?
Well, let's start again with a positive. I experienced overwhelming emotion and joy for the playoff game and Wembley. I think there might have been tears there. I wouldn't say I've cried, but there was a distinct moment when I was driving home from the Blackpool playoff game, the one we lost at home. And I distinctly recall on the drive back having kind of an existential breakdown and thinking, what am I doing? What is the point of all of this? There must be so many things that I could be doing more productive with my time, like basket weaving or pottery making. And I distinctly remember thinking that this is just rubbish.
Yeah, I think we've all been there. There's been certainly lots of moments of woe if they haven't produce tears too often. Nick, you're quite a crier, I'd imagine. I think there's probably a dozen examples you could have picked up here of games that have made you cry.
Whoa, hang on a minute. You're quite a cry. What was that supposed to mean?
Just in a football context. I know, right. you really feel it. I think that the emotion could get you moist in the eyeball quite readily.
I'm protesting about this, but you're absolutely right. I am. Yeah, the playoff final is obviously the big one, as I think we all. I'd be surprised if there were Forest fans who didn't have a little cry at that game. I was there with my mum and dad, who have been going to games since, 1989. And it was, I think it really sort of crystallized during lockdown, and well, the first lockdown, the kind of end of the Sabri season when, well, I mean, let's not talk about that. I didn't actually cry then. But even before it all went wrong, it sort of crystallized what I actually wanted from Forest, which was to be there with my mum and dad at a moment, at a sort of big game, ideally the playoff final, or winning promotion in a big game, something like that. And it all kind of got on top of me, burst into tears, composed myself a bit, burst into tears again. And then Matt and I realized that we were only a few blocks away from each other. So we kind of, you've seen those sort of clips of, it's usually American servicemen coming home and their dog runs out of the house and kind of leaps into their arms. That was like me when I saw Matt under the in the concourse at Wembley. Just it was a beautiful moment. Unhappy tears, the ones really were the 1991 FA Cup final and the League Cup final the following year against Manchester United. In my defence, I was, well, how old would I have been? 7 and 8, and I didn't really have the sort of emotional capacity to think that, or to put things, in context, that this was merely a football game. And I bawled my eyes out. Actually, as I did after the World Cup semi-final in 1990, when my mother always reminds me that I said after Stuart Pearce missed the penalty, but why did he miss? But mummy, why?
What was her answer?
I don't think she could really give a convincing answer. I mean, she, I don't think she was going to break down his technique and say, well, actually it was a fairly lucky save from Bodo Ilgner, who, he left his legs in the way and wasn't really what he was intending. I can't really remember that she gave much of a convincing answer.
If only she could have seen in the future and said, in a couple of months, he'll be pinging one into the top corner at the Stretford end and shutting some Man United fans up, and you'll feel much better about life, son. That sweaty Wembley embrace that we had will stay with me for an awful long time. It was terrific. I cried at the 1992 League Cup final as well. And my mum's rationale or way of comforting me was to say, don't forget, we saw Martin Platt from Coronation Street earlier, didn't we? Great. Didn't do that much to soothe me, but she had a go at least. Asha, when a Forest reduced you to tears.
Wembley. Yeah, and it wasn't like it was seeing someone else in the row in front of me lose it, but he lost it in a kind of uncontrollable way, and the emotion kind of took over him, and he didn't know what was happening. So, but he sort of turned perfectly to face me, and I saw all of this happen on his face. It was like it was joy, and then it was like, oh my God, I'm gonna go. Don't you go, don't you go. Oh no, I'm gonna go, I'm gonna go. And then it just the floods. And then I hugged him. It was random. I just thought, you know what? I'm gonna give you a, I can see you. I've seen exactly what you've gone through. I'm gonna give you a hug. And that set me off, because it was a huge release for all of us, because we had no idea when or if it was going to happen, and how it would happen, and who it would happen with, like it's a character like Steve Cooper. But yeah, I mean, everyone, I think we all left a lot of tears at Wembley, but they were happy tears.
Could we just have an hour discussing, maybe a separate pod all about the Wembley reaction? Because I'd certainly like to hear more about this sweaty embrace that you two shared as well.
We do a deep dive on it.
The other thing about that is in my, like, in all the years that I'd imagined this glorious game happening, I imagined being there with my mum and dad, and I imagined hugging them the final whistle. And then I also imagined this kind of texting my wife saying, well, Forest have won, I'll see you on Thursday, as I kind of caroused into the night and drank myself stupid for a few days. But I was so emotionally exhausted that I was in bed by about 9:30 that night, which I didn't expect at all. I mean, I just thought that this moment that I've been waiting for 23 years. So, oh well, it'll be a waste if I don't go out and celebrate this in emphatic style. But even by the time that I'd got to the tube, I was just sort of just so drained that I couldn't do anything else. Barely made it home.
Yeah, I experienced something very similar to the point where the next day I was too emotionally fatigued to go to the reception in the market square. So instead, I went with my wife to watch Top Gun at the cinema, and I cried my eyes out at Top Gun. And I thought, this isn't really about Top Gun, is it? This isn't what's making me so upset. It's all the emotion that I went through yesterday. But, you know, it's good that it manifests itself, listener, in whatever way it does, as long as it does eventually. All right, I think that's about it for today. David, very stellar debut. Tell people, please, how they can keep up with your fine writing and everything that you do.
Yeah, thank you. In the program, at David Marples on X, formerly known as Twitter. And also, you, if you haven't seen the recreation of the goals against West Ham using Subutio men, then may I point that out to you to enjoy. Some very sad individual person, when Forest do a win, recreates the goals. So that's at Trevor Francis Tracksuits.
Yeah, make sure you follow that, because it is one of the highlights of any Forest win. Seeing that. Arsha, Nick, top stuff from you as usual. You can follow our podcast on X, formerly known as Twitter. It's at the Garibaldi G, the Garibaldi Gazette on Instagram. And you can watch the pod on YouTube if you'd like to as well. We're there at the Garibaldi Gazette. Just search for that. We'll be back with another show next week when we'll be reflecting on that triumphant victory at Villa Park, wondering what happened in the pub, if anybody raved in their car, and plenty more besides. We will be releasing that podcast on Thursday, though, because there's the small matter of the FA Cup fifth round tie against Manchester United at the world famous City Ground on Wednesday night. So join us for reaction to those two games and more if you can. Until then, from all of us, it is goodbye. We'll be right back.